So it's an honor to introduce Chris Horak, who's going to contextualize the eyes of science for us.
Yeah, I first of all, I want to complicate the issue of the national origin of that greenhorn, because it is a little more complicated. The first letter is actually in Czech, and then they point to the sign, which is Hungarian, and then when you're in the classroom, again, it's the language you see first is Czech, and then German next to it, so who knows what he is. I'd like to first thank Dan Strebel for inviting me, and I also want to thank Annette Melville and the National Film Preservation Foundation, not only for contributing to the funding of this film we're going to see, but also for encouraging me to take a look at it. And I will now be, I'm actually working on a larger project which will involve this film and another film that James Sibley Watson did called Highlights and Shadows. And the film you are going to see tonight, The Eyes of Science, as it says in the program, is struck from the original nitrate negatives, and it is a world premiere here tonight. So, I first became familiar with Dr. James Sibley Watson when I was curator at Eastman House, and indeed it was my fascination both with Watson's work and with Paul Strand and Charles Sheeler's Manhattan, which led me down the path that eventually resulted in a book I did called Lovers of Cinema. Some of you may have seen it. And both of these films, or the films of James Sibley Watson, House of Usher and Manhattan, had previously really been ignored by traditional avant-garde film histories. James Sibley Watson was a prominent Rochesterian, heir to the Western Union fortune, born in Rochester in 1894. And he was a medical doctor. He studied medicine, but then actually never practiced. In fact, he became editor of a very well-known journal, a literary journal called The Dial, which had been founded in the 1840s by Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he took over from a man named Scofield Thayer and published it in the 1920s, published works by the poetess Marion Moore and E.E. Cummings, who was a close friend of his, drawings by Gaston Lachaise, and also the literary criticism of Kenneth Burke. In 1925, he became an amateur filmmaker, and he always considered himself an amateur, when he joined a group of other prominent Rochesterians to form the Cinema Club of Rochester, which was a branch of the Amateur Cinema League, and became its first chairman, and also started his own filmmaking at that time, initially with another gentleman, an art historian named Melville Weber, who was co-director of the Memorial Art Gallery in Rochester. He completed his first film with Melville Weber in 1928, and that was, of course, Fall of the House of Usher, which I'm sure many of you have seen. It's now on out on DVD, too. And that film is quite amazing in terms of its reworking of the kind of German expressionist style that American avant-gardists had seen in Dr. Caligari. And that film, as well as his later film, Lot and Sodom, he shot in his garage in Rochester, just off of East Avenue, a garage which still exists and is about 20 feet by 20 feet. It is not a large garage. And the amazing thing about both House of Usher and Lot and Sodom as avant-garde films is that they managed to create really synthetic spaces in this very small studio, mostly through the use of multiple exposures and lighting, etc. After Fall of the House of Usher, he shot a film which is not out yet, but is also a very interesting film called Tomorrow's Another Day. It is on Unseen Cinema. Thank you, David. Which is a spoof of an early sound film, and completely different from House of Usher in that it's straight on shots, but completely tongue in cheek, and about a love triangle. Then in 1933, of course, he made Lot and Sodom. In between these really strictly avant-garde films, though, he made a film in 1930, which was financed by Bausch and Lomb, which, along with Kodak and Xerox, are the three big Rochester companies. And that's called Eyes of Science. Now, what fascinates me about Eyes of Science is that on one level, it is, in fact, an industrial. But like a number of the other films that we've both seen and that have been talked about, it is a film that really mixes genres. And Eyes of Science, the very first shot of Eyes of Science is a shot that, when you look at it, is of a lab and does not look like an industrial, as we've seen in the generic film we saw this afternoon, but really looks more like a Frankenstein lab or something out of a German expressionist film. And it goes from there that in this film, while it explains the methods of producing lenses and the business of Bausch and Lomb, Watson and Weber catalog virtually every technique known and available to the filmmaker. And in that sense, it is both an industrial film and a meta film about film technology and film aesthetics. And that's what I think makes it very interesting. And it's interesting, too, that the film was, I haven't quite figured out and haven't done enough research to find out where it was shown or how Bausch and Lomb showed it, but I have found that it was shown quite extensively through the distribution network of the Amateur Cinema League to amateur filmmakers all over the country. In fact, there was a screening in Los Angeles in 1932 at the Los Angeles Amateur Cinema Club, in conjunction with the USC, that's the University of Southern California, not the one we're at, USC Cinema Institute. And the note about in the little review in the Amateur Cinema League journal, Amateur Movie Makers, says that this film shows the theory, manufacture, application of scientific optical instruments, and that every photographic trick is employed to exquisite effect. And indeed, I think that is true. So so I won't say any more about the film. He did make another film after that in 1937, Highlights and Shadows, which again, like this film, is really a mixture of genres. So I hope you enjoyed the film. Thank you.